We have had a lot of beautiful weather lately. It just seems like the Lord has blessed us more and more as we get weirder and weirder news out in the real world. And it makes me think about the fact that we can really focus on what we want to focus on. If we want to focus on the bad things, we can focus on the bad things. But as Max mentioned in his prayer, we have lots to be thankful for just with what we're given every day, the beauty that we're given every day. And we have been given just some gorgeous days of late. I woke up early yesterday morning before the sun came up and came over here. And there is a China berry tree here in town that is just glorious right now. And before the sun even came up, it was glowing yellow, like it was on fire or something. But it wasn't. It was just beautiful. And I think about how much more peaceful that was than messing with all the different things that are going on in this world. It seems like every time you turn on a television or a radio, you hear somebody that's doing something strange or somebody that is mad at somebody or mad at a group of people. And it just seems to me like we need to keep our perspective in the right place. There are serious things that happen, sure enough, but there's a lot to enjoy. And so why not enjoy it? And that kind of goes to the heart of what we've been looking at the last 2 weeks, and that is that we don't need to allow the unimportant things in life to steal our joy. As a matter of fact, we don't need to let the important things steal our joy. We can have joy at any part of our life, but we let joy kind of slip out of our grasp. And we talked this morning for a little bit about perspective, and I wanted to just share something that I saw this last week. It was in an autobiography, of all things, of Benjamin Franklin. And if you've ever read Benjamin Franklin's autobiography, it's pretty interesting. He was an interesting guy. But about halfway through, he started talking about cleaning streets and keeping dust down in streets and how he had done something in America and then encouraged them to do that in England as well. And I mean, it just went on page after page, and I was starting to think, okay, I'm about through with Benjamin Franklin's autobiography. And then he had a comment on that. He said, now this may seem frivolous to spend this much time talking about something that is so simple. But he said, let me read the quote. He said, human felicity, which is happiness, human felicity is produced not so much by great pieces of good fortune that seldom happen as by little advantages that occur every day. And he was talking about the fact if you just use your mind a little bit and take care of some things, it does take a little bit of time to actually think about how to cure different things and how to make life a little bit easier. And he was good at that. But the point that if we're waiting for something big to happen in life to make us happy, that's not going to happen in many people's lives. And what we've been talking about on this, that people allow to steal their joy, money. People want great wealth so often. Our possessions, a nice house, nice cars, you know, just something fancy. Sometimes it's our covetous nature, our envying of our neighbors. They've got something that we really like, and we'd like to have that too. And it kind of distracts us. And then what we started looking at this morning, the fear of everything. It just seems like we live in a time, and I suppose all times have been similar to this, but since we have so much access to the different things of information that just continually flow, it just seems like there's more and more things to be afraid of. You have to be afraid of public shootings. You have to be afraid of people coming into your border from the south. You have to be afraid of people making up things about you. You have to be afraid of people thinking that you're making up things about them. You have to be afraid of this and of that. And if we're not careful, we're just going to allow fear to take over our lives. Here is what Jesus had to say about that. We looked at it this morning, but Matthew 10:28. Do not be afraid of those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul. Rather be afraid of the one who can destroy both body and soul in hell. Well, if Jesus said you don't have to even worry about somebody who's trying to kill you, but to worry about a God, or to be concerned, be afraid is what he said, be afraid of the one who really has power, then I believe that that allows us to kind of ease back and step back and maybe not take things so seriously all the time, to the point where we're always concerned about things. Here is how David put it in Psalms 37. Starting in verse 1, "Do not fret because of evil men, or be envious of those who do wrong. For like the grass, they'll soon wither. Like green plants, they'll soon die away." And then in verse 7, he said, "Be still before the Lord and wait patiently for him. Do not fret when men succeed in their ways, when they carry out their wicked schemes. Refrain from anger and turn from wrath. Do not fret, it leads only to evil. For evil men will be cut off, but those who hope in the Lord will inherit the land. A little while and the wicked will be no more. Though you look for them, they will not be found. But the meek will inherit the land and enjoy great peace." Now, this is one of the things that Jesus brought up in the Sermon on the Mount, wasn't it? Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. David said, the meek will inherit the land. Now, I don't know if he's talking about the land now or if he's talking about the new earth. We're promised there's going to be a new heaven and a new earth. I suppose there's probably reference to both, that eventually here on earth we'll have what we need, but it's heaven that we're looking forward to. Now, we don't understand the new heaven and new earth, or maybe you do if you do explain it to me, because I'm not really sure I do, other than it's going to be new, and we're told that it'll be here. But it will be the meek who will inherit that. Meek is not weak. Meek is not timid. Meek is just somebody who has a humility and an understanding of their position before God. God is the one who is powerful. God is the one who is great. And he is the one who is in the first position. And so if we can be meek before God, and if we can have a proper humility before men, that's going to take care of a lot of things. It seems to be the people who've put themselves forward continually who get in the clashes. And they're the ones, they sure enough make the news, kind of like a fire makes the news. But a fire, one thing about it, it only burns the same thing one time, and then it's gone. But that's kind of the way people are. And it's kind of also the way that our problems of the day are. I was just going back and looking at a few things as I was preparing for this, and Mark had talked a little bit this morning about all the different things that when we were younger, it wasn't global warming everybody was worried about, it was global cooling. As a matter of fact, Time magazine had a cover story talking about the next ice age, which oddly enough we seem to have bypassed, and I think we can be assured that we're also going to bypass the world catching on fire because it gets so hot. Because God told Noah right after the flood, right after he enjoyed the sacrifice that Noah made, that as long as the earth existed, there would be summer and winter, heat and cool. We don't have to worry about that. Now, we do have to be proper stewards of the earth. I don't think that that means for a moment that we can be just wander around and ruin this beautiful earth that God has given to us any more than Adam and Eve could have been pleasing to God had they not tended the garden in the way that they should have. But we don't need to make the earth our God. Everything's going to be okay. There was a thing that happened in 1985 that those of you who are old enough might not remember the exact circumstances, but it made a big impact. And what had happened was there was a group of scientists, a group of Canadian scientists that had been monitoring the ozone layer. And they found out, I can't remember if it was North Pole or the South Pole, but somehow in this little spot at the pole, the ozone had depleted by 50% in a very short period of time. And so they really announced this, and they talked it up, and they told how what was happening was there was something called, I'm not even sure if I'm pronouncing it right, chlorofluorocarbons, CFCs, that were destroying the ozone layer. These CFCs of concern were the ones that men were making. They were the exact same type, essentially, as the CFCs that occur naturally. But somehow men, with their air conditioners and with their aerosol sprays, deodorant and all that, were going to, for sure, ruin the environment. And what was going to happen was the ozone layer was going to disappear, and we would all get skin cancer in a very short period of time because of the detrimental effects of the sun that we would have. And so what they did was they did away with aerosol sprays or a certain type of it. They did away with the Freon that actually worked within a few short years. And they made a Freon that was far less workable. If anybody drives a car or drove a car before that time, you might remember that the air conditioning could get so cold you could hardly touch those little metal things that they came out of when cars had metal parts. And now you don't have to worry about that at all. But the point is that they had all this worry and all this concern over something that was not within our power to change, because the CFCs that men put out, I believe the actual tonnage was 0.75 of a million tons, which sounds a lot, but the ocean puts out every year 600 million tons of the same thing. 600 million as compared to 0.75. And what scientists later on pointed out and admitted to was that men in their entire history have not put out as many CFCs as the ocean puts out in 1 year, every year, year after year after year. And they also didn't point out the fact that they had been worried about the ozone earlier. I can't remember when it was. I think it was back during the 50s that they talked about it, where a group of scientists noticed that the ozone layer was shrinking at a certain point or getting thinner, and they were kind of concerned about it, and they watched it for a while. And as they watched it for a while, it thickened back up. And so these scientists, being scientists, said, hey, this must be a naturally occurring thing. And they let it go. Now we spend billions of dollars every year for something inferior because we're afraid. Well, why talk about that? And again, I want to say this. It is because we are so easily led into worrying about things that are outside of our control. If people can do this with something as simple as an aerosol spray, isn't it true that people do this all the time with their relationship with God? They make up things. They listen to somebody who sounds impressive instead of reading for themselves. And they either become really concerned about things that are of no account, or they become unconcerned about things that are very much of account. And people get farther and farther away from the Word of God and get closer and closer to the apostasy that's going to come. And again, I think it's because we have our perspective wrong. Proverbs chapter 24, verse 19 says, Do not fret because of evil men, or be envious of the wicked. For the evil man has no future hope, and the lamp of the wicked will be snuffed out. Now, the reason I read this after that long and boring discussion on the ozone is this. Is because used to, all the time, I would get so irritated that they were doing things like this. I still, to this day, I cannot figure out why we stick corn in our gasoline. And especially if you go to the Allsups in Canyon, and you'll read a warning on the gasoline that says, warning, this has ethanol in it. And the ethanol will make your gas burn cooler, and it will reduce your gas mileage. Well, why do we do that? And it would just make me so mad that we would pay extra to do things like that. And it finally dawned on me, there's always going to be something. And if we will just take things as they are, we can change the things we can change. But if we can just kind of take things as they are and really be concerned about those things that are of eternal importance, then we can get to the work that God has put us here for. He really does want us to seek and save the lost. There really are people in Happy Texas whose souls are in danger. And people who we have some kind of influence over. We may or may not be able to convince them to become Christians, but we're a lot likelier to convince them to become Christians if we'll start praying and focusing and looking for opportunities to invite them to worship and study with them than we are if we just are always continually concerned about the biggest, the physical problem du jour, whatever that is. And it's one of those things that God has been telling us, I suppose, since the foundation of the earth. If we'll trust in Him, He'll take care of us. There will always be evil men, but we don't have to fret because of these evil men, and we don't have to fret that they may get away with their plots. Do you realize that if evil men get away with their plots, essentially all they're doing is getting away with a little bit of paper with dead presidents on it or whatever serves for their currency in their countries, but that won't help them in the long run. And it really doesn't hurt us that much in the long run. And so again, if we can focus on the things that God wants us to focus on. In Isaiah chapter 8 and verse 12, Isaiah really kind of points this out, or God through Isaiah points this out, as far as this worry about all these different things that are happening in society and all the different conspiracies that are going on and different things. There are conspiracies that go on. There's no question about that. That's the reason we have a word that's called conspiracy. But listen to what he said even back 700 years before Christ came. Isaiah 8:12. Do not call conspiracy everything that these people call conspiracy. Do not fear what they fear and do not dread it. The Lord Almighty is the one you are to regard as holy. He is the one you are to fear. He is the one you are to dread. And He will be your sanctuary. And it's in this last part. The first parts are hard to do. It's hard to ignore evil people getting away with evil things. And it is hard to think about the fact that when it comes down to it, God is much more important to us than these things that are in our face all the time. But the beauty is if we can kind of step back from that. Again, do what you can about what you can do. There are things that are going on in society that we can try and work on as far as it's up to us. But God really will be our sanctuary. Really will be our sanctuary. A sanctuary is a place of refuge. A sanctuary is a place of peace. A sanctuary is a place where you are protected. And that's what God has for us. And if we let ourselves continually get riled up, and I'm not saying that the things that rile us up are not important. And I'm not saying that we just give up and just put on a smiley face all the time. I'm just saying that we put things in their proper perspective, in the right priority. As far as perspective goes, I'm not an artist. Anybody who's ever seen any of my drawings will attest to that really quickly. But I've been around artists. I've been around Carolyn for, I guess, 36 years now. A little over, and I've watched George. As a matter of fact, George Loomis actually teaches art classes, and perspective is really important in art. Perspective is that, I understand from what I have read, that allows you to take a three-dimensional object and put it on two dimensions and make it look like three dimensions. And the way you do that is with perspective. You have the right angles, you have the right curves, you have the right shading. And even though it's just on a flat piece of paper, you can make it look like the three-dimensional object that it is. That's perspective. And the reason that we even talk about that is because really good art needs really good perspective. Well, that's the way life is. And if it's true in art, it is certainly true in our relationship to God. We need perspective that allows us to see what we're doing. Because if we take our eyes off of it, we're going to be afraid, we're going to worry, we're going to fret. Isaiah 41 verse 10 says this, "So do not fear, for I am with you." If you were in Bible class this morning, we read nearly the whole 40th chapter. It's a great chapter to go back to and look at. But chapter 41 in verse 10 says, "So do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. One of the things I have found in recent years is this. If instead of starting the morning with an alarm clock that has the news on it, I'll just wake up. And by the way, you can do that. Trust me, as you get older, it's not waking up that's the problem when you get older. It's going to sleep and staying asleep. But if I'll just wake up and I'll pray first thing before I even get out of bed, and then if I will get up and before I eat, I'll just read a little bit from the Word of God. There's perspective there that is far more important than what happened last night in China, what's going to happen in the markets today, what's happening in the political realm. The perspective that you can get from just getting up and reading a chapter or two in the Psalms or a chapter or two in Matthew or wherever it is that you want to read is far greater than anything that seems to be important for the day. Can you remember what was important to you 10 years ago? You know, the fact is, there is always something on my prayer list that is of extreme importance. It's of great concern. Being a preacher, I go to the hospital a lot. And because I go to the hospital a lot and I see people with symptoms that have put them in the hospital, and I realize I have the same symptoms they do. They were breathing and I'm breathing. They had hair and I have hair. I'm probably going to die. And you get to worrying about that kind of thing. And so there's always something to pray about. You know, please help me with this. Please help them with this. Please help them with this. And then when God does help us with these things, it's almost immediately forgotten. It's not always thanked or given thanks for. And then we move on to the next problem. But the things that are important, the fact that God is in heaven, the fact that God wants us to be with Him forever, and the fact that He wants lost man to be saved so they can be with Him forever, those are the perspectives that we need. And if we can keep that in mind, if we can do that, then we can take care of the other things. Then we can worry about, after you've taken care of your neighbor's soul as best as you can with your influence, then you can worry about the ozone layer, you can worry about the election, you can worry about whatever, ethanol, you can worry about whatever you want to worry about. Or maybe I shouldn't say that, you can be concerned about that and put your efforts into it. But if we'll take care of our eternal souls first, and those who we love, and those who we have opportunity with, it's more than just possible, it is probable and really certain that these other things will really fade in their importance to us. And it will give us our joy back. I'm going to offer the invitation tonight. If anyone needs to respond, we'd encourage you to do that while we stand and sing.